Sawyer.
Your Honor, I'm Chief Milby, representing the City of Dayton for the appellant in this case. I would appreciate 12 minutes of initial argument and 3 minutes for rebuttal, if I may. Yes, sir. Shall I proceed? Your Honors, essentially the facts in this case are that the property in question is a multiple-unit high-rise dwelling in the City of Dayton. The building was originally built and received an occupancy certificate for housing for the elderly. There was no definition in the zoning ordinance of what constituted elderly. Housing for the elderly is distinguished from any other kind of multi-unit apartment dwellings in that it requires fewer parking spaces. You can build more units with less parking space requirements. After the building had been built and in operation for a substantial period of years, the appellee bought the building and began renting to people below age 50. The elderly residents began complaining that they were being victimized and robbed by the younger residents who were being allowed into the building.
Do you agree at the outset that you arbitrarily set the age of 50 as being elderly?
No.
I want to make you understand I'm over 50.
I am too, Your Honor, and I feel very uncomfortable about this.
You
but
will be soon.
No, Your Honor, we really don't feel it was arbitrary. The manner in which the zoning administrator determined the age at 50 was, first of all, looking at the ordinance itself and finding no statutory definition, then going to the dictionary definition and getting no help there. It really didn't resolve the issue. So then he went to a survey of organizations or agencies which served the elderly, and he looked at those and found that the lowest age of any of those organizations was age 50. Moreover, when you consider that the objective of this is to allow higher density of occupancy in the building with fewer parking spaces, parking is obviously an important feature of it. And when one considers that most people start families at about age 20 to age 30, in society, and then you add about 20 more years to that, and their children are generally leaving home, either to go to school or to start their own families, and usually they take their old cars with them, and the number of cars that the family unit will have diminishes, and I think this is simply a function of considering the general sociology of the fact situation and determining that age 50 seemed to be a very reasonable cutoff point under all the circumstances, and it was well suited and well directed to the manifest purpose of the law itself to allow more dense occupancy of elderly occupied units.
Counsel, one of your paragraphs just troubled me in that you suggested that they needed to kind of try to experiment to see what age worked best, that the reason you wanted flexibility in the statute is they wanted to kind of work with this and work with that. So how is somebody know, like, you charge these people because it's over 50, but then maybe you decide the 60 works better because 50-year-olds, I mean, I'm going to be 50 and I'm going to still have kids in high school, and so doesn't that add to the argument that this is vague because you are experimenting and you may move that age around if you find something doesn't work?
I don't think so. The object of zoning, as I see it, is to allow the most intense possible use of the property within the contemplation of the ordinance and the regulation.
I understand your object, but your your statement is, we're going to experiment around with different ages and see what works. That's why we kept it vague. And that goes to the very heart of the issue of how do they know what age it's going to be?
Well, the way they know is, first of all, they are not, anybody who wishes to purchase real estate can first of all apply to the zoning administrator for a ruling, a determination. And the zoning administrator will make the determination and tell them before they purchase the property.
Was that ever done in this case?
No, that was not done in this case, although it certainly could have been. As I was saying, I believe in flexibility in administration of laws, and I think especially in the area of zoning, it really requires flexibility, and it requires an application of reason and common sense. I think where bureaucracy generally looks the most foolish is when it adopts a requirement that was really intended to be more of a rule of thumb with some flexibility, and it follows it to the logical absurdity. And we look our worst at that point, and I don't think that the bureaucracy should operate that way. I think reason should apply to the fact situations in every case.
We're dealing with a criminal ordinance in this case, aren't we?
Not really. This is not a criminal matter until the condition precedent to this being a criminal offense is that the person has to be served with a legal notice of violations, which tells them what the violation is, what section of the code is being violated, what they must do to correct the violation, how much time they have to comply, and then gives them an exhaustive appeal process that goes literally to the United States Supreme Court if they choose. And that all must take place before any criminal penalty of any sort can be imposed.
My only point was that since there is the possibility of a criminal violation, more precision in the drafting of the ordinance would be required as opposed to just a simple zoning ordinance.
I frankly disagree with that. I think that the requirement is that either the ordinance has to be precise or there has to be a means of making it precise. And in this event, we have an administrative law that provides that means for making it precise.
And you're
precise.
Contending that by using the term elderly, that it's more beneficial to the property owner rather than saying 65 and over.
I think it benefits the property owner in the sense that if the city commission established it flatly at 60 or 65, then that's the deadline, that's the cutoff line, and there's no more flexibility. Whereas if it's established as elderly and you allow the zoning administrator to make these judgments based on the individual facts, then that can only, as I see it, only operate to the benefit of the property owner because it means that more extensive use of the property can be allowed.
Under that theory, could Asbury be subject to a 50 age limit and then the administrator decide that this apartment building would really be better at 60? I mean, are you telling us that that's the sort of flexibility you give them?
I really don't think so. I think that the zoning administrator has to be consistent, and I think the zoning administrator has to probably start at some defensible position that perhaps, as in this case, the other side really hasn't argued with or hasn't argued that 50 isn't reasonable. And then if it appears with experience that can be moved downwards and still achieve the objective of the ordinance of maintaining a limited parking necessity, then I think that it's reasonable to move downward. I think if the zoning administrator starts jumping around with the age situation, saying first of all 50 and then moving to 60 and different ages at different buildings, I think then there would be a legitimate argument that it's unequal application and arbitrary and capricious, not in the ordinance in itself, but in the application of the law.
But isn't that precisely the problem, is that the ordinance permits the administrative person to make those judgments, and no one knows what his judgment may be?
Well, that's true, and I think the zoning administrator, though, is guided by the whole structure of the ordinance. What is the intent and purpose of the ordinance? And laws have been approved with regard to issues of vagueness that frankly shocked me at the lack of definition and direction, and I think this is far more definite. It gives far more direction. Essentially, what we're talking about, the guidance this gives, is this law tells the zoning administrator that whatever specific age you arrive at, it must be somewhere reasonably within the area of the age at which people start to slow down and simplify their lives and divest themselves of automobiles.
And the fact that the administrator chose age 50 because of the AARP has 50 as their age limit suggests that, I mean, AARP has reasons for lowering an age limit. They're totally unrelated to anything here. They want members. They go before Congress and argue that, you know, we're here representing our million members. Well, 50 years old is they could drop it to 40, and they've got a few more million members that they're that seems to me to be, it seems to me your argument is that, yes, the ordinance is vague, but it's okay because of these reasons, because of parking considerations, or the administrator is going to be reasonable in finding out what age is elderly. That's an argument I've heard before on void for vagueness, I guess.
In this particular case, there was no challenge as to the basis for the zoning administrator's having made his decision. That hasn't been challenged as him having made it in an unreasonable fashion or an inappropriate fashion. And again, that age hasn't been disputed. Nobody suggested that, well, gee, it ought to be 45 or 40 or some other age, or at least not until the merit brief in the Supreme Court. Prior to that time, it wasn't suggested. I think
doesn't your impression of elderly change with age?
Perhaps.
At 18, someone who's 35 is really elderly.
I know that's true.
At 65, someone who's 85 is elderly. Isn't elderly in the eye of the beholder really a you can look on this court and see there's two elderly people on.
Be careful.
The one with the grayest hair.
Justice Douglas, who was ancient, and myself. Now, we're easily discernible as elderly people. But depending on who's looking at it, it could change.
Right.
Doesn't that make it vague and unconstitutional because definition varies so widely with age, as an example?
I don't think so, because I think the ordinance keys it to a reduced need for parking, and that's something which is rather observable in the social life of human beings, that we observe that people's lives do tend to, when people retire, they no longer need two cars to each of them go to their own separate jobs, and I think those are observable phenomena that do make a rational basis for a determination in the context of this ordinance.
But doesn't your argument state that those definitions should be in the ordinance to make it more certain and more discernible?
I don't think so. I frankly would not. I would rather see it I believe that property should be used as intensely as it reasonably can, and I don't like to see unnecessary limitations imposed on real estate. I'd rather see it flexible. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Milby. Mr. Farley.
May it please the court, my name is Gary Froelich, and I am the attorney for the appellee Asbury Apartments.
Mr. Froelich, before you get into the basic argument, I have a procedural matter I'd like to straighten out with you, and if you're following through the steps, and we can do it, I think, pretty quickly. You filed an action to file a document that was couched as an administrative appeal and a request for a declaratory judgment.
In the trial court, yes, Your Honor.
The trial court, citing cases from this court, then said that if the trial court had jurisdiction to consider the constitutionality of an ordinance, in an administrative appeal or in a declaratory judgment action.
Yes, Your Honor.
We had the same trial court opinion. The next step was the trial court then finally said that the ordinance in question was unconstitutional, and specifically the trial court said, this court hereby grants plaintiff its declaratory judgment and finds 151-28E unconstitutionally vague. Correct?
Yes.
Did you, in your declaratory judgment action, asking for a declaration of unconstitutionality, serve the Attorney General?
No, we did not, Your Honor.
The 27-21-12 provides that no declaration shall prejudice the rights of anybody in any proceeding which involves the validity of a municipal ordinance, which is what we have. The municipal corporation shall be made a party and shall be permitted. And if any statute of the ordinance of franchise is alleged to be unconstitutional, the Attorney General shall also be served with a copy of the proceeding and shall be heard. If in fact you did not do that, if in fact declaratory judgment was given, doesn't that give you a jurisdictional defect?
Your Honor, it may give us a jurisdictional defect if the court so determines it. However, what I would ask the court to consider is to look at the merits of the case, and that this issue had not been raised before this very time by the appellant or in either of the two courts before this one.
I would concede that to you, that the appellant doesn't raise it, either the other two courts, which you have court jurisdiction over. But anytime there's a defect in jurisdiction, you're as well aware of the law as I am, it can be raised at any time, and it's almost required to be raised when it's discovered. But we wouldn't want to be deciding something coming to us without jurisdiction. But we may, maybe
if
some people will overlook that. I just want to be sure that I have the facts right, that in fact this is a municipal ordinance, and in fact 27-21-12, I know that to be right, says that.
Your Honor, we did not, and it is a municipal ordinance, and it would be more accurate for me to say that it was a municipal ordinance, because in fact, subsequent to the litigation being filed, the City of Dayton amended their municipal ordinances and specifically removed any classification or determination of housing for the elderly. That is no longer a part of the City of Dayton ordinance, which I think raises the question for this court to consider either on the issue of mootness or perhaps the issue of whether or not, since the ordinance is no longer part of the City of Dayton ordinances, whether the case still merits such general public interest as to require a decision from this court.
And on that issue, going to the merits of it, do you object to the penal nature, or if in fact the penal nature is not here and they were not insisting on the penal nature, that all you want to do is leave the young rowdies you've got these apartments there now, assuming that so?
Well, Your Honor, we do feel this is at some point in time in the process going to be a penal statute, because penal ordinance, excuse me. In effect, the city would seek to enforce this by a criminal sanction, both by a fine and by imprisonment. And in such a case, it would require that court to make a determination of the term elderly, which would be a vital element of such an offense. Now, whether or not elderly is sufficiently definite to meet the constitutional requirements is, I think, one of the key merit questions before this court. When I was about to, when I was introducing myself, I also wanted to add one of my other credentials, is that I am above age 50. And whether or not that makes me, quote, elderly or not elderly, I submit to you, such as Justice Sweeney has perhaps asked, may be in the eye of the beholder. And I think that the arguments that we raised in our briefs show that there are many beholders out there who use the term elderly in many different contexts. The examples of the Yes, Your Honor. That is the
So that there are, you know, a wide gamut of views. I mean, it's still, if there's a common understanding at some point in a challenge for overbreadth and vagueness, according to Hoffman, the state, if there is any application that is would be considered not vague, then the challenge has to fail. Do you agree?
Your Honor, I agree with the Hoffman Estates case, and we cited that in support of our position in our briefing. We feel that is the standard, and that is the question for this court to decide whether or not those standards are met, whether or not a person of ordinary intelligence has a reasonable opportunity to know what is prohibited.
Housing
what I
for elderly. So, if housing for elderly, we're all common understanding, and there are apparently there's evidence here that some of the residents.
Your Honor, the issue of whether or not there were people in their 30s or 40 was really never determined. There were allegations made, and there was evidence presented before the Board of Zoning Appeals, but as the record shows, we were not given an opportunity to cross-examine those people. So, no, I don't necessarily agree that there were people of any age less than 50 in there.
You don't agree that they were there?
I can't agree that the record reflects that. There may have been people. This property was used for, it is actually used under a federal program that provides for elderly and handicapped. And
the ordinance doesn't say that.
No, the ordinance, at the time when the ordinance was in effect, it only used the term elderly.
Which is the, I mean, that's all we should be concerned with, isn't it? Elderly?
Yes.
Not the term
yes.
Handicapped or disabled.
No, I was just responding to why there may have been people of a younger age than what the zoning administrator determined was elderly.
Yeah, but that's the potential violation, too.
Yes.
Does the Hoffman Estates case say that can we assume that a person of common intelligence would know that 30 or 40 would not qualify as elderly?
I'd answer, if I could respond to that in two ways. I don't believe so, Your Honor, that a person of ordinary intelligence would be able to make that determination, and I think that part of the evidence is that there are so many different classifications of what we mean by elderly, whether it's the Age Discrimination Act, where it's age 40, whether it's the determination when you qualify for... No, it doesn't. It uses an age limit, and...
Just says when, what age we can discriminate.
The federal housing law uses categories of what they call housing for elderly as an exception to the familial status rule, and in that statute, rather than just using the term elderly, it uses specific age limits, and that's what we feel the city of Dayton should have done at the time that this was enacted. We aren't
getting to the standards, Council, the standards that we should apply here, the Hoffman State, both sides agree, is the case that sets a standard for us. Challenge that there is no set of circumstances that would
Your Honor, the Hoffman test is a two-part test. It also is to provide explicit enough standards for those to apply them, as well as ordinary intelligence. The other part of my statement as to whether or not this is sufficiently specific enough is, what if a statute, what if an ordinance was passed instead of saying elderly, that it is housing for the young? Mm-hmm. What if we flip that coin and say, let's have housing for the young? Now, is that sufficiently specific enough so that a person who's...
someone who's 60.
Your Honor, maybe? I feel it's not my opinion that I'm suggesting. I'm just suggesting to you that in the legislation and in the public sector, there are many different opinions as to what the term elderly is.
So
whether
it's objective, so what you're saying is there is no objective understanding. There may be a lot of opinions on something, but we still could have an objective standard.
I think that the city of Dayton, I'm not disagreeing in this point that 50 may or may not have been a reasonable age or an unreasonable age, even though this was the first time I was ever classified as elderly. And I remember that meeting when we discussed that. What I suggest is, who and when should that determination be made? And it's not a determination that should be left to a zoning administrator to decide on a case-by-case basis what is elderly for a specific situation. Rather, Your Honors, I feel that should be a situation that should perhaps be made by the legislature using reasonableness standards, not perhaps, but should be made by the legislature using reasonableness standards. And it can be made. We're not disagreeing that the legislature,
but
the
in this
council,
instance, you have to make that determination early on, because if under the ordinance, if it's elderly, you don't have to have as many parking places. So that decision has to be made early on. You can't present the argument that you have no way of knowing.
Your Honor, when in the zoning law, if a person was going to develop a property, if they looked at the ordinance in advance of deciding what they were going to do with that property or submit their building plans, and they knew it was a specific age limit, then they could adjust and build the property to comply with reasonable requirements imposed. But that determination would be made in advance if an age was stated in the ordinance, rather than leaving it to the open-ended question of elderly. And that vagueness is what I feel, at the time that this ordinance was enacted, made it unconstitutionally indefinite to be able to be applied. I say at the time it was enacted. The city argues in their reply brief that it is not moot, because they say that they could go back and perhaps bring a criminal charge against my client. They could say, even though the ordinance, they state, even though the ordinance has changed, they might go back now and bring that. At the same time that they say that in their reply brief, that they might go back and therefore it isn't moot, they also say to you that you shouldn't consider it as a penal statute or that a penal ordinance, when I think it is, in reality, realistically, this is a penal situation where a person who is accused of a violation could end up in jail or could have a fine. Your Honors, in conclusion, what I would basically ask is that this court find that this situation now is either moot because the city of Dayton has changed its ordinances, or that it is no longer of such great public interest and concern as to merit the attention of this court, or to affirm the unanimous decision of the Court of Appeals and the decision of the trial court that in fact the term elderly is unconstitutionally vague. And not only is it unconstitutionally vague, Your Honors, but the ordinance itself doesn't just avoid placing an age limit in there, it doesn't even set any standards to determine what would be an appropriate determination for, or give any guidance reasonably explicit to the zoning inspector.
Could they enforce the new ordinance retroactively?
Could they at this time bring a charge that at the time, I think that they, depending on the statute's limitation, I think that they...
New statutes, new ordinance.
Your Honor, I would, it's a question that I have not prepared really to present argument on.
Given what you said, if we improperly allow it, it lets it stand, let's assume they come in and enforce it again. If we affirm it, they might can still enforce the new ordinance. If we reverse it, you don't want to hear that.
Don't want to hear.
Thanks, Mr. Billy.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Billy, you say 2 seconds.
Yes, briefly, I think it's important to bear in mind that this ordinance constitutes economic regulation because it regulates the owner's use of the property. It's not social legislation which seeks to limit housing choices for the elderly. It's an entirely different thing, and as such, as economic legislation, the vagueness test should be less stringent here.
Well, counsel, it seemed to me that's an extremely important issue. At some point in time, this owner probably won't be the owner of this building. There'll be a transaction in which there's a new owner. Now, how do you evaluate what it is that you're about to acquire or what it is you're about to sell when you don't really know who you can rent the units to?
The administrative procedure provides a mechanism whereby a property owner or a person who doesn't even own property yet but is thinking about buying it can obtain a ruling from the zoning administrator in advance specifying what the use can be, and essentially one would apply for a new zoning certificate, occupancy certificate, and the zoning administrator then would have to rule on that, and that gives you the certainty so that before you enter into that transaction, you have that protection. And once the zoning administrator rules on that, he's stuck with it whether he likes his opinion later or not. If he later thinks, gee, I may have made a mistake, it's too late for him to change that. So the property owner really has that protection. One last thing I would like to comment. I beg your pardon?
You've gone beyond 30 seconds.
Oh,